Welcome to season two of Historical Homicide. I'm ecstatic to be back for another season. Thank you, dear listeners, for all of your support in season one. Now, let's continue our macabre journey down the dangerous paths of yesteryear. Like season one, season two will continue to focus on murders in Chautauqua County, New York. And speaking of murders, it seems like a deadly tale is just around the corner. My question for you today is this. What are your thoughts on strangers? Tourists, non-locals, people who visit your community, the ones you can immediately tell aren't from around here. Do you welcome them with open arms, ready to hear about their lives and background stories, excited to learn more about ways of life that may differ from your own? To show them what local gems your small corner of the world has to offer? Or are you cautious, guarded, maybe suspicious of their character or intentions? Or are you simply exasperated by their touristy, imposing nature? However you see these strangers, good or bad, let's focus on our reaction toward them. Let's discuss our feelings about outsiders. We're standing in a field, in the cool, late September night air. All should be tranquil as summer exhales its last longing sigh, and autumn chills begin to awaken nature's colorful beauty. The air is still, frighteningly so, except for the humming of a car engine. A car containing no occupants, but partially covered in blood. And in the distance, the ominous crackling of a nearby fire breaks through the white noise. The smell of smoke awakens the senses and clues us into the terrifying prospect of what awaits us. But what exactly is going on here? How did we get here? To answer that, let's leave this liminal space and rewind back to earlier today. Let's go to the busy streets of Jamestown, where it all began. It's 1920 in Jamestown, New York. In the first episode of season one, we visited a very similar 1915 Jamestown. To refresh your memory, let's go back and have a look around. Hold on to your seats. We're in for a bumpy ride. And here we are, on Main Street. I hope you're in the mood for a show. There are many vaudeville theaters to choose from. For a small city, there sure is a lot to do. And if we want to stay the night, we have many hotels to choose from. Now, I know you're wondering, how did we get here? We didn't just suddenly appear in the middle of the city. We took one of the trolleys that the Jamestown Street Railroad controls. There are 7 lines and 20 trolleys. But with automobiles becoming more prevalent and infrastructure growing to accommodate them, we can take a taxi as well. Let's go hail a cab. There should be plenty to choose from outside the Hotel Samuels. Excuse me, sir, can you give us a ride? Oh, that's right. He can't see us. Let's discuss the cab driver that we're approaching. But first, a word from our sponsors. Evolution Spin Studio is an all-in-one fitness studio for group training, from fun and energetic indoor cycling classes, with some of the best instructors around, to full-body strengthening with yoga and TRX. But that's not all. Evolution has an infrared sauna for your recovery needs. It's a one-of-a-kind studio that has the lights, sound, and atmosphere to make your workout fun. You can check out their class schedule on the Vigero app. Hustle, grind, conquer. Evolution Spin Studio. Today's story focuses around one young man in particular, George Klinger. George is 23 years old, and though he's young, he's seen his fair share of the world, mainly its more gruesome parts. He's a war veteran with a good work ethic. He grew up in Bear Lake, Pennsylvania, and moved to Jamestown with his wife a few years ago to find work. His parents also moved to Jamestown, not far from George and his wife. Currently, George is employed by the Parker Taxi Cab Company. He used to work for Clark Hardware Company, but changing careers to a taxi driver seems a lot more lucrative. Downtown Jamestown is bustling, and if he parks outside the Hotel Samuels, there are sure to be plenty of paying customers. The future is calling, and if George works hard and saves enough money, he and his family are sure to have a comfortable life. It's awfully crowded outside the Hotel Samuels today, and these cabs are going like hotcakes. If you're anything like me, you're probably getting a little impatient and frustrated. Those two young guys just took our cab. I didn't get a good look at their faces. Did you? No? No matter. Let's grab the trolley. I'm headed on the Lakewood line. Would you care to join me? It's getting dark, and it's about to get much darker. It looks like a lot of folks had the same idea that we did. It's crowded on this trolley and hard to see everyone that we're riding with. Ah, here we are. Our stop is coming right up. Freeze. Let's break away for just a second. Looking around this trolley car is difficult. It's overcrowded, loud, not to mention warm. It's impossible to see every other passenger that we're riding with. Keep this in mind as our story progresses. Unfreeze. Let's get off this trolley and fast forward a few more hours. Before we fast track time, let's hear from our sponsors. The Aesthetic House on Fairmount Avenue offers a medical spa experience like no other. From facials to fillers, Botox to laser hair removal, massages, and more, the wonderful staff will put you at ease while fulfilling your beauty requests. To book your appointment, check out the Aesthetic House on the Vagero app. Do you smell that? It smells like someone's having a late-night barbecue, but who would be cooking at this hour? Does the air feel heavy to you? There's a thick smoke emanating. Something isn't right. We're near the intersection of Lakewood and Sugar Grove Roads, and the smoke is growing thicker and thicker. There's a fire in that field! Apparently, we're not the only ones who noticed. Looking around, other people are gathering. A man named Mr. Dibble is going to investigate. He thought he heard a car backfire, but fears that it's something more sinister. Perhaps gunshots. A trail of blood leads to a blazing fire. It looks like it's just straw. But wait, is that a hand? No, not just a hand. There's a whole body under here. Well, what's left of it? Mr. Dibble extinguishes the fire. The body has been badly charred, almost beyond recognition. Most of the clothing has been burned off. It's hard to distinguish, but it looks like there's a gunshot wound in the back of this person's head. Their arms are bent as if trying to push the haystack off them. This person didn't die from their head wound, no. The fire killed them. Who could this poor soul be? A few miles away, an abandoned taxicab, still running, appears to have crashed into an embankment. Splatters of blood are all over the side of the car. Let's take a peek inside. Looking through the contents of the vehicle, the metal checks, the personal effects, we see to whom this taxicab belongs. We can now identify the poor soul who lost their life tonight. The charred body in this field belongs to none other than George Klinger. But now that we know who the victim is, the biggest question looms heavily. Who killed George? As the police begin their investigation, one officer in particular becomes intensely interested in the case. Undersheriff George Tarbox. He's angry. How did someone commit such an atrocity in his county and get away with it? Well, they won't get away with it for long. He will follow every lead, no matter how vague or inconclusive it may seem. Tarbox is on a mission, and he'll track down whoever killed George Klinger. But here's the issue. Not only does the killer need to be apprehended, a motive must be found. Why was George murdered? He didn't have any known enemies, but was there someone out there who had an issue with him? Was this an act of vengeance? There was a quarrel George had with two non-local customers earlier this summer at Midway Park regarding cab fare. They said they'd get him one day. Could they be making good on their threat? With so many unknowns, it seems like Tarbox is grabbing at straws just to get a lead. Here's what we know so far. George was last seen in front of the Hotel Samuels. He had two customers getting into his cab, two young men. That's it. It's pretty thin information, but Under Sheriff Tarbox is already on the case. He catches word that the Telling Houston boys were in Jamestown enjoying themselves the night George was killed. They were also seen around the intersection of Lakewood and Sugar Grove Roads around the time George was murdered. Now, let's back up for a second. Who are the Telling Houston boys? Martin and Andrew Telling Houston moved to Busty last year in 1919 with their father, DeBelt. Though they aren't from around here, they did purchase a farm and have been making Busty their home. Their presence in the area has never raised any alarms. Until now. Martin and Andrew are 14 and 16 years old. Young men. Like the ones George was last seen with. They were seen in Jamestown on their night out, and by the murder site around the time the murder was committed. Tarbox decides to pay these boys a visit. He explains the boys' possible culpability to their father and takes them to jail in Mayville and holds them on suspicion of murder or knowledge of George's murder. DeBelt knows his sons are innocent, but considers himself a law-abiding man. Although he's upset, he won't get in the way of the undersheriff's investigation. While jailed, the boys deny any knowledge of what happened to George. In fact, they took the trolley back to Lakewood and walked home from there. That's why they passed the murder location. It's on their way home. Now, let's pause. Do you remember when we were outside the Hotel Samuels, two young men cut in front of us and stole our cab? We didn't see their faces. Also, when we couldn't get a cab, we took the trolley home on the Lakewood line. But the trolley car was warm and crowded. Did you see the Telling Houston boys? It was hard to see anyone, but I certainly didn't see them. Without any charges to hold them on, or any evidence, the judge is compelled by writ of habeas corpus to release the boys from jail and send them home to their father. The Telling Houston boys have the absolute right to a hearing before a magistrate. What started as a hot lead has quickly fizzled out, but Tarbox is keeping his eyes and ears open for more clues. Something has to come through. He decides to go to the Hotel Samuels to see if anything suspicious presents itself. We'll get back to the undersheriff in a minute. For now, let's travel to Uniontown, Pennsylvania, where two thieves are arrested for stealing a car the day after George's murder. The men, 19-year-old Harry Wilson and 30-year-old Edward Persons, are apprehended after they steal a car in Ashtabula, Ohio. Out of a church parking lot, by the way, just a reminder, folks, lock your car wherever you are. Anyway, then they flee to Pennsylvania. Wilson and Persons are then extradited to Ohio and are now sitting in the Ashtabula County Jail. What do they have to do with our story? Well, initially, nothing. But Harry Wilson starts talking. And what he has to say is interesting indeed. He begins by mentioning his and Ed Person's time in Jamestown. Now, let's get back to our undersheriff. Tarbox goes to the Hotel Samuels and begins to ask questions. The staff seems unsure of anything suspicious, but they do recall two young men who left in quite a hurry on the night George was killed. Then, the hotel's delivery boy pipes up. He remembers the men who left quickly. One had the last name Persons. The boy remembers because it was poorly written on the mail he was delivering, and he thought it said Perone. The mix-up stood out in his mind, and he showed Tarbox the room where the men had stayed. As he searched the room, Tarbox found postcards that had been delivered to Ed Persons. It looks like the two men are salesmen from the Cleveland Artificial Flower Company. Tarbox calls the company in Cleveland to inquire about Edward Persons. Ed had indeed worked for Cleveland Artificial Flower Company, but was terminated due to his dishonest dealings. Finally, a solid lead. Two men stayed at the Hotel Samuels impersonating salesmen. With this information, Tarbox calls the Cleveland Police Department, who aids in the search for Ed Persons and Harry Wilson, only to find them already apprehended in Ashtabula County, Ohio. All the pieces are starting to fit together. At this point, Sheriff McCallum and Undersheriff Tarbox decide to take a little visit to the Ashtabula jail. With some persuasion, Harry Wilson starts spilling all the details. He and Persons are car thieves and con men. Harry insists he is not a killer. When they got into George Klinger's taxi, Harry had absolutely no idea that Ed had a gun. Harry didn't shoot George and had no plans to do so. But why did Ed kill George? Edward Persons shot George Klinger because the latter did not give over his money or his vehicle. It was a robbery gone wrong. Harry did help Ed hide and burn George's body, and they made their escape. Harry's confession is shocking. He admits everything and is transferred to the Chautauqua County Jail in Mayville, New York. But Edward Persons will not give up that easily. He knows his goose is cooked, but he refuses to confess. He also refuses to deny Harry's account. Sometime later, he is also transferred to the jail in Mayville to await trial, where he eventually confesses to the murder of George Klinger. Wilson received a sentence at Auburn State Prison, while Persons was sentenced to death by electric chair. We all have different views on outsiders. We can be automatically suspicious of the other, like local people were of the Telling Usen boys, simply because they didn't grow up here generationally. Questioning whether or not they shared the values of the community because they had recently moved to the area. But the concept of strangers stretches beyond those who are geographically foreign to us. Those who dwell in our community can also be our strangers in the social and emotional realms. The point being, strangers, outsiders, they're everywhere. Be open to learning about the world around you while simultaneously trusting your instincts. If something feels off, it usually is. Stay safe out there, dear listeners. And before we conclude this episode, I'd like to say a special thank you to Hugh Golden and Lori Peterson of the Lakeview Cemetery. Without their help and guidance, this season wouldn't be what it is. Tune into the next episode of Historical Homicide, airing October 11th.